audio amplifier on the far end. Let me drop.
Well, most equipment is gives you a specification for CMO.
CMO is common mode rejection. When you've got the system set up correctly, so that you're sending in, which maybe use your dynamic microphone, has two leads coming out of it that go to those two wires inside of that shielded cable, and on the far end is a fully differential amplifier, which might be an op-amp, which is only looking at the difference in the voltage between the two cables. And if you've got the right kind of an amplifier with a lot of common mode rejection, you might even have as many as volts of 60 cycle pickup on that shielded cable. But because the amplifier at the far end is only looking for the differential between those two wires, and the common mode voltage, which is the hum pickup of those twisted pair, gets completely wiped out. And there are operational amplifiers that will have common mode rejection of numbers like 60, 70, 80 dB, maybe even 120 dB, if carefully chosen. So you, as you can see, hum pickup is not a problem as long as you're smart enough to set up fully differential circuits. And at first, it's not common sense why in the world they would go through all that extra effort. But because the word shielding, when it comes to low frequency like 60 hertz, let me drop that. You try to shield from 60 hertz magnetic circuit, like maybe your wiring runs near a transformer or a choke with 60 cycle signal on it. You'll be amazed how easily that 60 cycle signal will go through your double shielded cable and climb right onto that center conductor. So you've got to use the fully differential technique to get around that. K6DPZ, K2IW, go ahead, Al.
K2RIW and the TechNet K6DPZ. Okay, I just wanted to bring something up maybe a lot of people don't realize. When you talk about a transformer, or that center tap transformer, let's say is 600 ohms, from the center tap to ground, it's not half, it's one quarter the impedance. So if you have a 600 ohm transformer, you center it from each side, from the center tap each side, it's 150 ohms, not 250 ohms. Or 300 ohms, I should say. I just wanted to put that comment in. I'm going to go grab a coffee. I'll be right back. K6DPC. You agree with me, Dick? Explain why.
Whenever you use a transformer with a certain number of turns in the primary and a certain number of turns in the secondary, and we call that the turns ratio, that gives you the voltage ratio. But impedance is a function of voltage squared. So the turns ratio of your transformer, if your transformer has a 2-to-1 turns ratio, primary to secondary, it will have an impedance ratio of 4-to-1. Whatever the turns ratio is, you double it. It's a function of the fact that power is a function of E squared over R, or I squared R, if you know what I mean. It's a square law function. So, quite a few people will fall into that trap of using the turns ratio as an impedance ratio. The next person on the list was Paul, WS2N. And what technical question would you like to ask tonight, Paul? Go easy on us. I'm having fun with Paul. WS2N, K2RIW.
Can I make one more comment before I leave the car?
Go ahead.
A lot of people find transformers at Hamfest and stuff like that, like let's say ARPA transformers or something. A very easy way to determine the impedance of a transformer, primary to secondary, is you find an ARPA transformer. You don't know really what the impedance is of the transformer. You put, let's say, a 5-ohm resistor on the secondary side of the ARPA transformer. You take a 1,500-ohm, no, a 5K pot, carbon pot. You put it in series with the primary side of the transformer. You take an audio source via an HPT oscillator, a function generator, or what have you. And you adjust the pot. I read the voltage drop across the pot with an AC meter, like a digital voltmeter, and read the voltage drop across the transformer winding. Make sure both voltage drops are equal. Take the pot off. Measure the DC repeater.
Timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
What Hal was describing is the so-called half voltage technique. Whenever you have an unknown impedance you're trying to measure, it might be what is the series resistance of your milliammeter or your microammeter, and you can't measure that resistance directly. You go to a low enough ohm scale of your volt ohm milliammeter, and you try to put that across a 50 microampere meter. You will peg the thing and bend the needle before you can measure the resistance. But by making a series circuit where you adjust the resistor in series with the thing under test, so that the voltage drop across your resistor and the voltage drop across your thing under test could be a microammeter, could be a transformer, primary winding, whatever. When those two voltages are equal to each other in series, that means there's half voltage on your device under test. Now your external resistor is the impedance of that device, assuming there is no phase shift, assuming it's a pure resistive load. In the case of a microammeter, that's easy. It's a pure resistive load. In the case of a transformer, where you're testing it at a reasonable frequency, like 1 kilohertz, and the transformer is rated for 1 kilohertz, the half voltage technique is a very handy technique. So you can put millivolts or microvolts across your device under test with the half voltage measured, half a voltage measurement technique, and you're still measuring the impedance to multiple decimal places of accuracy if you do it right. K2RIW, standing by. Let me reset the machine. So you'd be amazed how many people have damaged a microammeter because they wanted to know its series resistance, and you can't measure it directly with most volt ohm milliammeters. With a modern day digital voltmeter, maybe. But the half voltage technique is very handy. Paul, WS2N, what would you like to ask us tonight? You got it, Paul. K2RIW in the tech net.
Okay. Good evening, Dick. And everybody on the net. Just wondering about these power lines that are being installed all over everywhere in my area. And from what I see on the PSE&G net on the computer, there's quite a few projects going all over. And they're upgrading the lines. Apparently it's FEMA funded. And they're taking the existing wires and doing away with all the poles, all the telephone poles that are out there, the wooden ones, and they're putting in bigger diameter ones, much higher. I would say the old ones are probably about 25 feet high. These things are about, you know, 30% higher than that. And all kinds of brand new wires being run. I see red, blue, and green. And let me drop it. And they have reels hanging up there, and they spend, you know, weeks and weeks, like for instance by me on Motor Parkway, all the main roads, it looks like the 13,000 volt lines, because some of the transformers that they're putting up, the big transformers, you know, it looks like then they drop down. But it doesn't look like they're taking anything off the existing poles, including the, you know, Cablevision and Verizon. It looks like that's all staying, which means everywhere there's a pole, there's a double pole, one-third higher, all brand new. I mean, this is all heavy duty. If we have another hurricane, I think these are going to really help. But I'm just curious if anybody knows if they're going to pull out the existing all the poles. And really for a safety reason, I noticed a lot of car accidents. Let me drop it. As people are coming out of the side streets, you now have sometimes two pole widths as they're looking down left and right to get out into the main roads. So just curious if anybody knows if they're going to pull those other poles out. But they're doing a lot of work, and I mean, there's a big difference since they've taken over. They must have got a lot of money. Everywhere I go, north of me, south of me, and if you check on the net, there has to be dozens and dozens of locations on PSE&G website. Back to you, Dick.
Comment?
And I also have a comment, too. Okay, John and Eric in that order, and I've got a comment. Go ahead, John.
PC2W.
WTV. If they're putting adjacent poles, more than likely they're going to remove the old poles, but the utility company is responsible for the power wiring. Now you have the cable companies who are responsible for the lower 20 feet and the telephone company. They will work on that after the power company is done and then probably remove the poles. That's usually how it goes. Back to you, Dick.
Comment.
Okay. I thank you, John. Eric is next, and there's another person saying comment. And that sounds like somebody we know, but we'll get to him in a minute. Go ahead, Eric. KE2EJ, KE2IW. KE2EJ. Well, I wanted to point out what John just said, but there's more to it than that. It depends upon who owns the pole. Like, PSE&G is in the process of going to pull a pole for a number of different reasons, and bigger poles. And of course, it's going to be bigger if you go taller. One is the way LIPA used to run stuff, and the way the previous Long Island Lighting Company used to run stuff. At that point in time when they put the things up, the trees were really trees at that point. They were just little things that were way under the line. So I don't know if you've noticed, when PSE&G took over, first thing they did was cut all the trees around all the lines. Now, depending upon who the poles are owned by, in this case, it's PSE&G that's doing the replacing, they licensed the space on each pole to Verizon and Cablevision separately. So there's this all big chunk of legal stuff that goes on when they replace the poles. Then they replace the poles, and then after all the legal stuff is taken care of, then Cablevision comes and moves their stuff, and then Verizon comes and moves their stuff, and depending upon the way the agreement was written, usually PSE&G will come back and remove the old pole. And that's the way the story goes. And the whole reason for it is to provide better electricity. You notice that through the storms that we've had far less outages than we've had in the past. K2RW, K2J.
Very fine, John and Eric. And the other person who had a comment, his voice sounded a little bit like Vito, but I'm not sure. The other person with a comment, please give us your full call letters and name, and then your comment. K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick. You've got a commenter.
K2ZJE, Ed. I was told by a crew the last company off the pole is responsible for its removal. Over.
Very fine, Ed. Thank you for that information. Now, Paul, is your concern of pole removal and rewiring and whatever, are you concerned mostly with the aesthetics of the neighborhood and when this unused hardware is going to be removed, or are you also concerned with the apparent radio frequency biohazard, which is really not radio frequency, it's a 60 hertz. You'd be amazed how many people think that they're being bathed with a significant amount of energy because of the three-phase, 60-cycle wiring of these high-voltage transformers, is not the right word, high-voltage towers by which the wiring takes place, the so-called transmission lines and distribution lines. So is it biohazard? Is your major concern? I suspect not. I think it's aesthetics. You want unused poles removed so that the ugliness is minimized. Is that approximately what's going on here, Paul? WS2N, K2IW in the TechNet.
I'm not concerned with the way it looks. I'm just concerned with the double poles near the corners. As you pull out, and if you have a pull out onto Motor Parkway, and all these are probably mostly county roads, if you pull out onto these roads, and some of these people are flying at 60 miles an hour. I know they shouldn't be, but they are. And people are pulling out, and you don't have that vision. You know, one pole in the way is one thing. When you have two, it's a little tough to see. So So I was just wondering if they were going to do that. Apparently, from what John says and Eric says, they're going to go bye-bye, which is good. And RF-wise, I was curious, of course, that being on an F for so many years, I didn't expect any problems, but I don't see any problems with anything different with 80 or 40. So, but they are higher. And I was curious about the color of the wire, the droppers. Comment. These blue wires and red wires. I mean, you know, there's reels hanging up on all these poles all over everywhere. You know, if I go 10 miles outside my area, I'll still see this. And they're doing a terrific job. I think they're doing very good. But the color green is up there. I didn't think they had a color green for anything. You know, I know that it's generally ground. But when they run the, for instance, the 13,000 volts, there's really no ground here, ground system, I don't believe. You know, it's not just a wire that's running down, you know, the side of the pole into the ground. I mean, these little long cables going from pole to pole to pole on the yard arms. The yard arms are all, they look insulated with these big orange things on there. They're doing a hell of a job. Back to you, Dick.
Dear K6DPZ, I got a little more comment about impedance when you have a chance.
Yeah, we're going to put that aside for a while because we got a line of people commenting on the subject on the floor right now. The person who said comment before Hal, who was that? Give us your call letters and name and your comment on this subject. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, Dick.
Hey,
John.
K2CJE.
Hey,
the caller that you're looking at is rope. Usually they use three or four different colors, so they don't, when they pull the actual cable, they keep the phases correct. Over.
Interesting. So, Eric, you're not talking about the color of the reel that the cable is on. You're talking about the color of the cable as it's strung in the air and put onto the insulators on the tower. I'm amazed that is now being color-coded. Double-check me on that one, Eric. I'm Paul, WS2N, K2RIW.
Comment.
D with the comment.
Okay, no, it sounds like the one station, I don't know if that was, he was kind of low, but he said it was probably rope. I think that's right. That's probably what it is. I saw it tied off to different poles. That's probably rope. Back to you, there.
Hold on now. Are you talking about the color of the cable or the color of the rope that's pulling the cable, or is the rope wrapped around the cable? Where is the rope with reference to the cable, Paul? WS2N, K2IW?
The rope's always connected to a dead end.
They have these reels that are hanging up in a, on a pole, and it's got to be rope now. Now I'm thinking about it, because if that was cable, I mean, that would, I don't know if the pole would survive that kind of weight. These are big, big reels. So, okay, I got it. That's rope that they probably pull the cables with later. Back to you, sir.
Okay, we have two other people with comments on this particular subject. Let's take them in order. First person, please just give us your call letters to make sure we're not just doubling. First person with comment, give us your call letters and name, sir. Go ahead.
K2IZ, John.
Okay, IZ, John. Who is the second person with comment?
K2GJE, Ed.
Okay, we got John and Ed in that order. Go right ahead, John, with your comment.
All right, I'm glad to see the subject of double poles is still up because it's not going to go away. Verizon, your telephone company who I started with, used to be responsible for all the poles. Lighting company moves their stuff first, and then telephone company, and then Cablevision. Verizon does not want to take part anymore in the outside plant. Have a nice day. We had the vice president of outside plant, basically. She's the town's councilwoman up in Huntington, Tracy Edwards. She appeared at a Suffolk County supervisors meeting and said, oh, there's hardly any double poles out there anymore, and CWA Local 1108 walked in and presented proof of several, close to 1,000, if not more, double wood. They're doing away with the line gangs. They don't want anything to do with it. There have been cases upon cases of a pole getting knocked down. LIPA comes out, moves their stuff, Cablevision moves their stuff, and then you usually drive by and see the pole, you know, the old pole roped off to the new pole because Verizon will not come out and do the work. They don't want to do it anymore, and they're doing away with the line crews.
So let me go back to you, John, on this one. Who is responsible for removing the disabled or the abandoned pole? The pole that they're no longer using anymore, and if it's in some cases going to sit there for years, who really has responsibility for removing that pole? K2IZ, K2IW in the TechNet?
Really, whoever is the owner of the pole, who owns the pole, you usually look on it, and you'll see a tag on there. The old days it was LILCO, or you'll see NYT on there. And it becomes an interesting point also because after Hurricane Belle and Hurricane Gloria, before Cablevision, this is the, when you go up and restore a pole, lighting company goes first, telephone company goes second. So, like I say, if the phone company owns the pole, and they own most of them now, they used to anyway, they're responsible for the final removal of the pole. I mean, I knew a lot of people in the line gangs over the years, and you'd always see them going out on weekends for hit poles. They had to go out there, you had to swing all, you know, lighting company would swing their stuff over, and then we'd swing our stuff over, and then Cablevision would, and then, you know, the phone company would take out the old pole. Of course, that's to replace the new one and go on from there.
In the case of a pole that's left for years on end, a double pole where one of them has been abandoned, and the owner of the pole doesn't remove it, what does a township, what resources does a town have to force the owner of the pole to do their required removal? I mean, does the town have to sue that company? Do they have to bring a lawsuit? What's the machinery by which they force the abandoned pole to finally get removed? K2IZ, K2IW in the TechNet?
The unfortunate part is, Dix, the pole is not abandoned. I can walk up a block from my house, and I got double wood up there. And the only thing hanging on the old pole is the telephone company stuff. So the phone company is responsible. You know, they have to move their stuff over. And what they're doing is they're doing, you know, let's save money. They're just trying to make all the stuff go away, ignore it. And again, it went up to Supervisor, Suffolk County Executive Ballone. Because people were just complaining too much about it. You know, there's double wood all over the place. And again, this woman presented herself for the executive and basically got spanked in public because the union said, hey, this is the stuff out there. So again, who's ever the last one to move the stuff, they're responsible for taking out the old pole. But again, I can walk two blocks up and the old pole is tied with heavy-duty line to the new pole, and the telephone cable is still on it.
My first impression is something is wrong here, John. In order for new poles to be installed, that township had to give permission for the new poles to be installed. At the instant that a town meeting was held and a proposal was made to install new poles because the old ones are deficient, don't have enough capacity, whatever, didn't the town at that time saying, okay, we're going to give you guys permission, you're going to get a permit to put in those new poles. That's just the first step of the process. The next step is that so-and-so is going to remove his wires, so-and-so is going to remove his wires over to the new pole, and then at a known time, which is set ahead of time, the poles that are being abandoned are going to be removed. Wasn't there a multi-step process with timing defined at the beginning. And if not, then maybe the talon was a little bit short-sighted. K2IZ, K2IW, go ahead, John.
Dick, the talons have absolutely nothing to do with it. One of the guys years ago went to Bell Labs and he saw the telephone pole forest there. What is Bell Labs? We'll put telephone stubs in the ground and see how long they last. But what happens is you know, say a pole gets hit by a car, for example, during the last work stoppage. Pole got knocked down. Lighting company came out and they, moved their stuff and they basically, told the phone company, okay, you got it. Let's say the towns have no input. It's basically, they know over the years, okay, pole's been hit. Pole's been up there too long. Our engineers are supposed to talk to their engineers. I go out on a job and I say, the pole's unsafe, the pole's rotted, the hazard, the whole nine yards, and then the workflow is supposed to go from the craft to my manager, who in turn turns it over to outside plant engineering and says, we have a defective pole. Outside engineering is supposed to say, okay, we're going to replace the pole. They're supposed to talk to the lighting company, they're supposed to talk to Cablevision, everyone comes out there, they agree on a date, okay, this is the day we're going to do it, or the week we're going to do it, and the work flows. That process is now gone, because the phone company doesn't want to get involved anymore. So again, well, I guess what the lighting company is doing now is saying, hey, look, if you guys won't do it, we're taking our own initiative, and, you know, they've done something, I don't know what it is, I've been out about 6 years now, but like I say, Dick, it never goes to town level. It's done internally, engineers, and it's supposed to be a coordination of effort, which don't happen no more.
John, you're making it sound like either the lighting company or the telephone company or the cable company, somebody is acting as if they have carte blanche. They can go and put poles anywhere they want to with no permission, even though they're doing it on town property. Who in the world set it up that way that they have carte blanche where they can do anything they want and no permission is required? Something doesn't sound right here.
Comment?
Hey, dude.
Okay, we're going to take John and Eric in that order. KC2WGB, go ahead, John. Who has got real jurisdiction for putting up utility poles? Who's in command here? And does that take jurisdiction precedence over a town's property or a county's property? Go ahead, John.
AC2WGB. Absolutely. The utilities are in command. Why? They write their own paper. They're responsible for any litigation. They're responsible for any liabilities. They take the full boat. They can dig up the street like Edison. Does not have to do anything according to an electrical code. They write their own code. It's always been that way. And it's the same with the pole situations. But what they do, if you notice, the utility sometimes will take the top half of the pole off and they'll lash the bottom 20 feet to the existing new pole, just to make it a little safer. But that pole could be there 2 years and there's nothing the county can do about it. The telephone company or whoever's in charge of that, the utility that's in charge, is really in command. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. KE2EJ, KTRIW, go ahead, Eric, and then we're going to pick up Ed in that order. You're right, Eric.
Comment?
KTRIW, KTRIW. I don't know if you remember, but when I was 18 and 19, I used to work for a guy who owned a company called Huntington Cable TV before the Dolans came around. And the way it worked back then, New York State Public Service Commission, in conjunction with the counties, they created these right-of-ways. If you've got poles in your backyard, there is a right-of-way, which in essence belongs to the electric or telephone company, depending upon who's providing service where. So anything that goes on within that zone of right-of-way is theirs to do. But there's a last recourse, which is the Public Service Commission, and they get into the act when people don't do what they're supposed to. Now, just as another little tidbit, I have a friend who's actually an executive secretary to the guy who's the president of Verizon. And the rumor has it is that he basically wants copper to go away. He really doesn't really like Fios, and the only thing that they really want to concentrate on is wireless, because that's where the money is these days. It's most of the big tel companies and a lot of those in the United States have sold their copper and fiber services to other companies which have taken them over. And many of them are struggling because they just don't have the financial backing that the big companies had. It's another nasty little tidbit. K2RW, K2GAN.
Right, thank you, Eric. We've now got two more people making comments. Ed, and I think it was Barry in that order. Ed first, K2GJE, K2RIW. Tell us who's in command here, Ed, and what we should do about it. You got it, Ed.
KD2HUC with a comment. K2GJE, am I on the air?
GJE, you're on the air. Go right ahead, Ed.
Okay, thank you. Now, I just had an old comment about the colors of the rope. Those reels are rope, and there's usually three reels up there on a temporary cross arm of three different colors. I'm assuming that's so they don't, when they do pull up cable, it's all black. There's no colors, that's rope. I think they use it when they're doing a pulling sequence so phases don't get crossed. Although before any switches are closed at either end, that is checked out, that is checked out. I have an old comment on how to find the internal resistance of a meter. For example, if you have a, let's say a common 0 to 1 milliamp meter at 1,000 ohms and 1 volt, you'll have 1 milliamp. So if you have a 1.5 volt battery and a 2,000 ohm pot, adjust very carefully the milliamp meter to full scale. Then put a variable resistor across the meter and adjust it to exactly half scale. Measure that resistor, that's the internal resistance. Over.
Very fine, Ed. That is a second variation of the so-called half voltage technique, and you're describing the half current technique equivalent of it. Very valuable piece of information, because you can't directly measure the impedance of a microammeter or a milliammeter without damaging it in many cases. Okay, we have both Barry and Steve in that order. I think it was Barry making a comment. Was that you? I heard Barry, N2 Moonbound, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Dick, it's KD2FIU George, and I just wanted to bring something in about how the utility companies have their right of way. Do you mind me bringing in the comment?
Go right ahead, George, and then we'll go to Steve right after you. You got it, George.
It's a state real estate property ownership grant. All states have it. It's called easement in gross. And it could be done to any level of property ownership, whether it's small residential, whether it's commercial, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's anything, that while the company is building its infrastructure, they get the grant through the actual real estate laws of that state for what's called easement in gross. And that's where it falls on the books.
That's amazing. And now, if there are double poles years on end in your particular community, what local official at the town level, county level, state level, what official do you go to in order to really get the problem corrected. If you're unhappy with the fact that there's double wood and some of that wood is abandoned, what should a citizen do to go to the right place? Over to you, George, KQRIW in the TechNet.
It depends on if the company, I can only say this for telecommunications and not power, by the way, Eastman and Gross is for all service companies. But in the telecommunications field, if they've taken their cables off, they could only take their cables off and stop providing the service as if they were approved by the FCC to de-tariff that service in that particular segmented area that it was originally tariffed under the scope of the original tariff. If they had been de-tariffed, then the subscribers had been given alternate service capabilities of equal to or greater capabilities. And then at that point, the owners of the property can go after the company directly.
I can see how some people think that they're going to get a lot of runaround in these situations. Steve? KD2, I think it is HUC. Steve, what power have we got in these situations? Over to you, Steve. K2RAW in the TechNet.
Utilize it.
Hey, KD2HUC. Yeah, Dick, as you can imagine, I spend a lot of time working with the guys from LIPA and PSE&G. And as it was explained to me, the reason why there's so many double poles and you know, the other utilities, you know, it looks like the power company's taking initiative is, as it was explained to me that, you know, before PSE&G took over, we had LIPA, which was a state agency. And they may or may not have been doing everything that they were supposed to as far as audits and reliability. They have what's called NERC, you know, National Authority on Electric Reliability or something of that nature. And basically they came in after Sandy did an audit and Long Island got spanked. So let me let it drop.
Can I have a comment?
Kind of trying to, you know, rebuild transmission and, you know, the major, the three-phase mains of the major distribution. And they have to go and make the poles meet modern-day code. And supposedly, you know, they're getting some pushback from the other utilities that are on the pole because they're not under the NERC requirements. So PSE&G goes out, sinks a whole new pole line because, you know, they need to meet these requirements. And Verizon and Cablevision, they don't want to spend the money. They're already on a perfectly good pole, you know, as far as they're concerned. So they're reluctant to move it. As far as what you can do about it, the last thing I saw, you know, neighborhood fighting over getting a double pole removed, they actually went to Community Watchdog and Newsday. And that's how they ended up getting it removed, because the town couldn't do anything, and the utilities kept pointing at each other. So, back to net, KD2HUC.
Very fine, Steve. We got three people lined up right now with further comments. John Isaac first, John WGB second, and Eric third. K2IZ, go right ahead, John.
Hey, Dick, I'm sorry I didn't explain it better when you said who owns it. The last thing I'll say is, you know, when we used to work outside, backyard poles, Levittown, and a lot of places like that. We go in and say, you know, knock on the door and say, hi, phone company. I have to get on your pole. I have to get up on the pole in the backyard. And a lot of people get very, very adamant. You're not going on my backyard. You're not allowed on my property. Get out of here, but put the dog on you. Well, if you read anywhere in your ownership of the property you own, it says you will provide access to the phone company and all utilities. And I'll tell you what, a couple times after the people were not happy with this being pointed out to them, I don't know what their problem was. I know one time I had two Rottweilers trying to get up the pole to say hi to me. And I had to finally call the police, dial 911 right from the box itself. The police had to comment, oh, I forgot you were out in the backyard. I'm sorry I let the dogs out. But, yeah, with a little smirk on their face. Back to you.
Comment. Okay, we got three people lined up with comments. Next person with a comment was John, KC2WGB. Go ahead, John.
KC2WGB. Well, Dick, don't forget, most of the poles they're mentioning, all of the products have been removed, the utilities, maybe the lighting, it was moved over and stuff like that, but the telephone company left their wire on the pole. The pole is not abandoned. The wire is not removed. That's part of the process, too. So if they leave it attached to the pole, it's not an abandoned pole. It's a defective pole. Well, you know, they're going to take care of it. So that's what leads into these long terms. Back to you, Dick. KC2WGB.
Everybody pointing to somebody else. Eric, you've got a comment, and at the end of your comment, I want you to also tell me about what took place adjacent to my property, because you were involved in that, when Mr. Ishimura, I think it was, had his cable system, head-end amplifier, right at the tip of my property. I presume some form of easement took place at that time. Did that easement go east and west or north and south? If it goes east and west, then in theory, that easement goes across the back of my property. KE2EJ, K2IW, go ahead, Eric. K2IW, K2EJ. Well, this was when? This was in the 70s. One of the things that I wanted to say was that we had crews that would go out and plant poles. And sometimes they would put them outside of where they should have been. The complaints would come in from the Public Service Commission and the directive to move them. I don't know if that, you know, if they still do that in terms of making complaints, but the things that they would be really upset about is when you put poles that obstructed safety, for example, like what W.F. Duran was talking about. When you come out of the street and the double pole's there, it literally blocks, it obstructs your view of the street, so you don't know when the right time to pull out is without getting whacked by somebody. And I would hope that they still pay attention to stuff like that, but they may not. And as far as the city of New York goes, when I lived in Astoria, let me know to drop this. Time Warner wanted to put a pole right in our backyard. And because there is no easement in the backyard the way it is, you had the right to refuse. And we did. You know, their thing was, well, we'll give you a free cable for life. And we said, no, thank you. And near my brother-in-law. So they basically had to convince the person next to us to plop a pole in there and then further down. So they had a really long line that didn't have poles close enough, and it would sag and do all sorts of really wonderful things that people would have problems. But that was the case. Now, James Nishimura, who you mentioned, nice fella, passed away, I think, about 4 years ago. He owned the property where those 390-foot poles were ganged together, but there was actually easement in, I think, both quadrants and directions, because the trunk line actually made its way out to Vanderbilt Floodway. I have to think about that, but I remember there were two main trunk lines, and they both head off in different directions. So, you know, they were part of the state easement setup, where it joined the poles. I think that it had Wilco at most particular days. So, yeah, one of them went to Wilco, one to a New York Telephone Company pole. So, there you go. You can figure it out from there. K2IW, K2J. So I'm not quite sure now if all of his wires coming out of his setup from his cable TV input antennas, off-the-air antennas, did all that wiring go out to Vanderbilt and then go parallel to Vanderbilt, or did any of it start at his poles, which looked to me like they were or close to 100 feet back from the road, did any of his easements go in any other direction other than straight out to Vanderbilt Parkway? Over to you, Eric. KQIW.
You know, the main trunk feeder and the control stuff that went back to the office, which was in several different places. So actually, you wound up with a few bundle of cables that were dead, you know, depending upon what year you were talking about. Yeah, the main stuff went out to Vanderbilt Parkway, but there was, I think, let's see, we had microwave to UA and Comac. You know, that was cool. You'd love this. That was an AM microwave system. It was really cool. Had every station on the cable system on it. Big fat bandwidth. But there was a secondary that went down, I think it went through the back and wound up on Deer Park Avenue and headed south that way.
Okay. You have a guess as to where my property is. Do you believe that easement went across the back of my property, which would be kind of east-west, or to get down to Deer Park Avenue, did it go directly south to Deer Park Avenue across somebody else's property? Over to you, Eric.
No, I think it went south. Because, yeah, you were west of it, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, no, the only thing that was kind of funky was making it out to Vanderbilt Parkway. And from there, it was all life reasons.
Understand. Okay, there's another person who had comment. Please give us your call letters and name if we haven't heard from you before. KQLIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
KG2, IXP, John. Good evening, Dick. I don't know if you've heard, but just this last week, the New York State Legislature passed a law making it a felony to restrict or assault a process server, a lineman who enters your property to clear the right-of-way, and one other group of people. I'm not sure who it was, but it's now a felony.
Interesting, John. Good to know. Eric, let me go back to you. A request was made for an easement or something like that to allow a utility pole to be put on the back of your property in Queens, and you and your family refused. Therefore, they had to go to an adjacent property, but still the wire had to be sprung in the same direction. Therefore, the sagging wire was going across the back of your property as opposed to going to a pole that was on the back of your property. Was there a real advantage in refusing that pole placement, Eric? KE2EJ, K2IW, now that you know the big picture?
Yeah, I would have eaten up a lot of garden space in both of our backyards. Don't forget, this is New York City. This actually is all landfill. This is where old man Steinway, the Steinway piano factory around the corner, built the really lovely row houses for his employees. And as far as the city of New York is concerned, the road that runs between the houses is not a public road, but yet the Department of Sanitation will actually utilize that, and they do plow it so they can come and pick up your garbage. But there is actual no power easement, simply because the easement that they have is in the front and it runs underground. And Time Warner, being the cheapos that they are, decided that they're not going to run their stuff underground and go through the expense of that. So they string it up. And actually, it hung out, it got ripped down a number of times by garbage trucks and things like that, simply because of the floppy way they put it up. And by the way, just as another thorn in New York Telephone, or what's the Verizon now, there's a multi-bundle copper that ran from one part of the block to the other. Those cheap buggers will actually just splice in the bad part and leave the rest of the cable rot rather than replace the whole thing. That shows you the really intense cheap mentality.
Interesting set of problems. Now, Paul WS2N, you're the guy who asked the original question. I wonder, look what you've started. I wonder if you've got enough of the answers that you're looking for, or is there still some things to be cleared up? WS2N, the guy who had the original question, K2RIW, go ahead, Paul.
Very good. I'd like to thank everybody with the answers. And as far as I'm concerned, it looks like we're going to be stuck with a couple of double poles for a while. But I understand it's going to take some time to eventually get them removed. Somebody said you eventually sometimes you have to go to the community to get it removed because of safety. Well, we'll try that. But I mean, there's hundreds of locations like that. So, I'm not going to be the only one, I'm sure. And Ed had a good answer with the rope. I was wondering about the colors, so now I know. Ed, GT, very good. Thank you, Ed. Back to you, Dick. We'll continue on with the net. Back to you. WS2N.
Hey, Dick, I got one additional thing that might be helpful.
Go right ahead, Eric. Wait for the beeps.
I've heard of a number of places over the years, including recently, where that when they put up an instruction like that, the local community went to the county and forced them to put a mirror up on the other side of the street so they could see who's coming. And I don't think they like doing that.
From your point of view, Eric, does Paul have the ability to demand that that mirror be there for driving safety reasons while that double pole is present, creating a visual blockage? KE2EJ, K2IW.
Now, let's put it this way. If you live on a particular road that leads off into a main road, you've got like, you know, a dozen or two dozen houses on it, and all these people have to go through the same thing, I'm sure a petition of every single homeowner there will have some weight when it comes to complaining to the county, which will in turn make a lot of noise to the Public Service Commission, which might in turn make a lot of noise to the defendant involved.
I hear you. I live on Vanderbilt Parkway. Vanderbilt Parkway, some time ago, a decade or two ago, was declared a historic monument. Mr. Vanderbilt built this particular road in order for his raceway and convenience to go from his residence on Long Island all the way to New York City. It is a two-lane road with lots of curves on it. Three or four times per year, particularly on a Friday night when the road is wet, cars don't go around those curves correctly. It is a 30-mile-per-hour speed limit on Vanderbilt Parkway. Nobody does 30 miles an hour. So a number of times per year, a car doesn't negotiate the turn correctly, and it leaves the road. As such, I've had cars plow across the front of my property, plow down my mailbox, two or three times per year. Many of my shrubs out front have been thoroughly destroyed. So cars leave the road on either the south side or the north side, so to speak, frequently per year. That's a piece of given information. Let me show you what happened next. On that road, a few years ago, an additional utility pole was going to be installed. And I caught the guys about to put up the utility pole. They were doing it quick and dirty. They were about to put the utility pole right at the edge of the road, where four or five cars per year leaving the edge of the road would be striking that pole. Going to create an awful lot of grief. I told them about how often cars do not make that turn, and I said, you guys better put that pole a healthy 5 feet or more further off that road, otherwise you're going to be replacing that pole and you're going to be killing people. They listened to me, and they did mount the pole further off the property with the permission of the person who owned the property. Thank goodness that person gave permission. So the pole, thank goodness, is now a considerable further distance from the road that they were going to install it. Had they been left to install it right at the edge of the road, boy, that would have created a lot of grief, in my opinion. I wonder how often that situation occurs. Anybody with any further comments on all of the above, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet. By the way, I solved the problem. I solved the problem of my mailbox being mowed down so often by mounting the support pole for my mailbox quite a bit further away from the road, to which you would say, hey, the U.S. Mail Department's not going to tolerate that. Well, my pole from the ground comes up, makes a right-angle bend, and then sticks out as a long cantilever for the right distance for the mailbox to be mounted for the mailman to be using it. Now, once or twice per year, my mailbox gets struck by an automobile leaving the road. It pivots that piece of 2-inch diameter tubing. My mailbox swings out of the way, so to speak. I go back and swing it back. Once every 3 years, they hit my mailbox so solidly that it becomes destroyed and I got to replace it. But most of the time, they don't hit my post anymore because it's so much further back from the road because of that cantilever approach. Anyway, any further comments on all of the above? K2RIW, I'd be listening.
AC2KY with a comment.
AC2KY, go right ahead. Start with your name, sir.
The first name here is Warren. Thank you, Dick, for picking me up. It's been a while, and I'll have to check the facts. I'll have to check with the utility tomorrow and get back to you, but I know as you come down Port Washington Boulevard, north, those lines are not 13.8 or 6600 phase to ground. Those lines are 69 kV, or they're at least 100 kV, and they go from sub to sub to sub. Over.
I intended to get a little bit into this one. We, as ham radio operators, quite often use 600 ohm open wire lines, 450 ohm, sometimes 300 ohm. As long as those open wire lines are spaced a small fraction of a wavelength at the frequency being used, and as long as they're being used in a thoroughly differential manner, the right kind of a balancing device feeding them, you would be absolutely amazed how well shielded they are. To the human eye, they look like they're open as all hell. They should radiate like crazy. They absolutely do not, as long as the wavelength is small enough between the two. Okay, in the case of 60-cycle lines, I don't care if they're 30 kilovolts, 600 kilovolts, 300 kilovolts. Almost all of these high-voltage distribution and transmission lines are three-phase. The fact that it's not two lines, the fact that it's three lines, as long as the three lines are being used in a thoroughly balanced manner. Let me drop one. You would be amazed how well shielded they are. Those lines are carrying 60 hertz. 60 hertz has a wavelength of 5 million meters, which is 15,000 feet, 3 miles. Wavelength is 3 miles. You and I know that the spacing between those is an extremely small fraction of that wavelength. So as ugly as those lines look, and as high as the voltage is, common sense would lead you to believe, boy, my health is being affected something fierce because my house is right alongside of those lines. In the case of where Paul lives in Ronkonkoma, a lot of these high-tension lines are going right alongside of residences, and people got a slightly decreased price of their residence because it's in the vicinity of those high-voltage lines. And I've been to at least one of these meetings where the people were objecting to those lines for fear that it's a health hazard. Let me drop it.
Those lines are shielded, so it's not the way you think.
They are shielded by way of technology. They are not shielded to the eye. Those three high-tension lines on each of these, it's a three-phase system, and the spacing between those lines is such a small fraction of a wavelength, as long as they're being used in a differential manner, in other words, as long as all three wires are carrying the same amount of current with 120 degrees of phase shift, they look open wire, they look like they should radiate like crazy to an eye. They are extremely well shielded because they are approximately 1/1,000,000 of a wavelength spacing between the wires. If you and I placed a 450 ohm and 600 ohm twin lead to our antenna, 1/1,000,000 of a wavelength of spacing, you'd be amazed how well shielded it is. It doesn't even have to be a twisted pair. Is that sort of what you're referring to, Eric, when you talk about shielding? In other words, the amount of magnetic field and the amount of electric field coming off those wires, if you actually go and measure it, you'd be extremely pleased at how small a measurement you would make. KE2EJ, wait for the beeps. K2IW in the tech net.
Well, the next time you come by the TV station, I'll show you a 13.5 kV light. And you will see that there's actually two sets of